At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
The Varsity Club Restaurant and Bar salutes to brave men and women of our armed forces. You can help our soldiers by donating blood. One pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Get out and donate blood. This message is courtesy of the Varsity Restaurant and Bar, 278 West Lane Avenue in Columbus, located on campus, serving our community with pride since 1959. The iconic Ohio State Bar and Restaurant. Great food, great cocktails and beer, happy hour and more. That's the Varsity Club Restaurant and Bar. On the air because they care.
Back to Old School with DP and J on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
What up, we're back. Jay Foreman, Austin Orman, Old School crew today. We're diving into the coordinator talk just because we got a big game tomorrow. And text message, don't hesitate to text in with your questions. Obviously, there's going to be plenty, obviously, before the game, obviously, plenty during the game, plenty after. None of us know the answers. The only people that know the answers are probably Matt Rhule and those two and whoever's in the coaching staff. But, you know, obviously getting a new coordinator with 3 games left is, it's not normal, especially from the outside end. You know, promotion within is normal, but I also say that Coach Holgorsen is familiar with Nebraska just because he was around in January. People, you know him from his air raid and his offenses, you know, being, you know, particularly West Virginia and then Houston. He was at, obviously, some other places and obviously a part of, you know, some pretty high-powered offenses. But when he was the head coach and he was obviously the primary play caller, they were putting up some numbers. Now, people also need to understand, in particular, let's look at West Virginia because he was there the longest, you know, both as an OC and then obviously, with, you know, head coach afterwards. You know, in that Big 12, you had to be air raid. You know what I mean?
It shifted. So when he first got there, yes.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. I mean, that's when he got the job, that's what he was known as. You had to score points. Yeah. And that's what, you know, the Big 12 was down and that's what they needed to, you know, stay alive and obviously, you know, be appealing, you know, to a point. You weren't going to step out there and compete. And I remember when they used to play Oklahoma, it'd always be like 49, you know, 42, you know, 52, 47, all those things. So you're not going to play against Oklahoma and them and think that you're going to try to win a, you know, 27-17 or 21-17 game. That wasn't going to happen unless both teams played like hot garbage. And then obviously the same thing in Houston. Obviously, you know, Tank Dell is a Houston Texan and obviously you know, Coach Holgorsen is obviously recruited and developed and coached him. Obviously, with the numbers that he put up, they were obviously very, you know, pass heavy. But also, I think the thing that gets glossed over is that he did run the ball at a decent enough clip and had some running backs. They had Devine back there. Remember the running back Devine?
Noel Devine.
A different type of runner. But, I mean, he ran the ball, and he ran the ball in that type of Big 12. So, people say, well, he ran it out of, like, 11 personnel. Well, he still ran the ball. And
he can't be picky about how you run the ball.
You're not going to see a lot of 23, you know, two fullback, running back, and 3 tight ends. Now you might see 3 tight ends, but you're not going to see the old school line them up and blow you off the ball in that Big 12. But he ran the ball. And so, you know, I think people was like, okay, you got air raid. We can't do it where it's a total change. I think this is more of a rhythm, pace, idea change. Now he will implement some plays and concepts, but I think that's where you're at right now because he's not calling, he's not running, he's not bringing his playbook and hey, say here, come back in a week.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
Even with the bye week,
right?
It's not exactly how it works.
Now in the pros they do that. NFL, you got a week, you got 2 days, you better get it right. Yeah, you better know it.
How often did that happen to you?
We never got a new coordinator during the year and a whole new playbook. Now we had different play. I've had different play callers.
Plays.
Different. Oh, you get different plays. and coverages every week.
How many on average?
Depends on who you're playing.
Like a piece of paper front and back, couple pages.
You might get, well, you got all the different checks and possibilities, okay. Right? So sure. You might get anywhere, let's just say 4 to 6, 8 max. Mm-hmm. Now, there's been times like, well, I will tell you this. Vic Fangio is notorious of just...
Notorious VIC.
Yeah, of giving you new stuff. I'm talking about almost a new playbook. Now, what I will tell you this, mentally and being engaged in defense and what we needed to do to be competitive, we had all 11 starters plus the rotational guys all bought in to whatever we needed to do to be one of the top, and we ended up being number 8 defense. So we could handle that bandwidth.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when, I mean, it was, then it got to the point where, I remember one time, I'll tell this, but we'll get back onto it. My favorite coverage that he called was cover 8. It allowed me to be a totally different player. It allowed me to orchestrate the defense. Is kind of a cover 4 because we in it if it's slot and the splits are tight, we play a certain cover 4. If it's back offset, tight end or slot close enough, we played it. It just allowed me to be a coordinator, and it was all based on that. So, but we kicked butt on with it for 2 years, two or three years. I'll never forget this. So we go up to Denver. And first,
altitude.
Hey, that altitude was on your boy like no other.
Quick.
Well, it welcomed me to Colorado and sent me back. Threw me out the club. I mean, I remember being in the hotel thinking, like, man, I'm having a heart attack. Like, what the hell? Like, what the hell is going on? You know, like, hey, Austin, you know, I didn't run anywhere.
You're in shape.
Right. Just had a little carry-on bag. And I'm just like, oh. I'm tired. Then you start thinking. Then it gets
now that Denver Airport, Lincoln Terminal, to wherever else right. You're going, that's the run.
Right.
That's when it gets
We just got off the plane, get on the bus. Then I'm thinking, like, damn, how am I going to play tomorrow? Right? Your brother is tired. So then, but then, you know, then usually when you play, you do catch your second wind. So you always kind of wait for it. Then I'm like, okay, I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
Second wind never came. It was, hey, Austin.
Still waiting to this day.
Austin. Hey. I told you what last time I went up there.
Yeah.
Brother got the altitude sickness.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to have a foot surgery. I'm trying to find somebody else. I ain't going up there again. I'm scared. Right? Brother might have developed sickle cell anemia or something. Man, I was locked up. You saw me, dehydrated too. Parched. It was so bad, Austin, when I was up in Colorado, they had this oxygen thing. Mm-hmm. I had like 3 of them. And it wasn't working.
Oh no.
Oh, yeah, I was
you need 4.
If there was any remedies, I tried them and it didn't work. Well, anyways, so we played Denver and we played them tough, but everybody altitude sickness, even Vic calling the plays. They beat us. So we had a bye week the next week. And he comes in and we did the self scout. When we're doing this defense, this, and this, he got the cover 8. And so that's what he changed our cover 8 for like 2 or 3 weeks once we got in the red zone. Now, we've been playing it fine, right?
Mm-hmm.
The only time that we got beat was Randy Moss, like, jumped up and caught a one-handed one.
No shame in that.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, right?
Marshall, stand up.
Right. And so he changed it up to cover 8 red zone, and then he made it so confusing. And he was like, oh, when we play regular eight, we used to call it 8 catch, or 8 play it, we do this. And he was like, oh, our win percentage, our efficiency percentage, he's like, oh, we're at like 78% against the run and the pass. We're playing winning football. You know, don't give up more than 3.2 yards a carry and whatever. He's like, but in the red zone, we giving up 80% touchdowns, right? Hey, Aaron Glenn, good shout out to Aaron Glenn, D coordinator at the Detroit Lions. He's going to get a head coaching job. Little Aaron Glenn, man. He stands up, and Aaron Glenn barely says anything. He stands up. He's like, well, why the hell are you calling it then?
He said,
why the hell you keep calling it then? And everybody, because Aaron, so we had like theater seating, went up. So everybody turns around to Aaron. You know he ain't up but like 5'9", right? He's like, yeah, I said it. Stop calling it. it was out. Hey. It was out. So that's the only thing I had, you know, with different calls or different stuff like that. So, you know, I think I think it's, now I might be wrong. I'm just assuming it's an idea, a more aggressive approach, what he says, a calculated aggression. You got a former head coach calling plays. So he's calling plays as a head coach. So you feel more comfortable with clock management and when to be aggressive and stuff like that. Maybe those are some of the things that Coach Rhule and the staff probably thought maybe was a struggle before. Like, you know, we talked about the one time where, you know, I don't know what game was. They were running the ball at like a certain yards per carry. Emmett was getting off. Dante was getting off. And then the next two series, we passed it like three times in a row, three and out. And then the first two of the next, you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So maybe that's the change. Now on the flip side, to Tony White, the 3-3-5 versus the 4-3 or the 3-4. I hate to burst your bubble, people. It's called a 3-3-5, but they play a four-man front. Now, if they only have three guys there and they don't have anybody setting the edge, that's probably a misalignment or assignment. So we already play a four-man front. And I do understand what they're saying. Come down with four-man fronts. It's a little bit easier to develop and recruit to. But we don't play a true 3-4. I think a lot of our pass rush comes from our three-down guys. Mm-hmm. And James Williams, I guess, is part of that. We don't have two TJ Watts and, you know, Sean Merriman's out there. You know, we're playing like true Alabama 3-4. Mm-hmm. You know, where – so – I just think when you play the 3-4 and you can cause a lot of confusion, and that's pretty much what we did when you play the 3-3-5, where you have a, you know, kind of couple hybrid guys out there and you can create matchup problems and confusion by where you line up, where you come from on for the offense, and then you can obviously defensively you're doing it. You still have to be extremely disciplined. And I might argue that you have to be more disciplined because you have different body types doing things that they generally aren't accustomed to do based on what the offense is giving you or based on what the defensive call is giving you, right? Or what your assignment is, the defensive call. And then you have to be phenomenal in communication. And that's pre-snap. That's, I don't know what you call it, during the snap. You know, the different stuff. So pre-snap. Pre-snap is two things. Pre-snap is calling the play and then alerts. Alert for this, alert for that. And then you make the checks. That's pre-snap. And then during the snap is communication during or right prior, what's going on during the play. Then post-snap is just checking in and making sure you got to make sure that if somebody messed up, so forth and so on.
Which of those three time slots of communication is always pre?
Took it right out of your mouth. Because here's why pre is so important. This is where linebackers have to be excellent. And this has nothing to do with star ranking. You have to be able to take people along with you. That's why I love cover 8. Because I could pretty much control the whole thing. Mm. I control the front. I control the second level. I control the third level. Mm. All based on what they're doing. But then also I can really dive into the details till we can play it.
Does Nebraska have that guy behind Bullock? Do they know who the next communicator in the middle is going to be?
Next year?
Yeah.
It probably had to be Mekhi Bear. He'd probably flip over, and then I'm assuming Shavers, whoever comes in there. I mean, look, they got Dylan Rogers. I'm sure they got some other guys that I just necessarily don't know about that's going to be able to compete in play. But I'm just assuming Mekhi Bear would be there, and then Shavers, and then you need some other guys. You need this because you talked about Jamal Charles. You talked about some of the Shavers, right? Who's playing? You talk about some of the other freshmen that are playing, or some of even the veterans. Your job is to bring them along with you. Mm. So if you're, say Austin, say you're Shavers, right? And somehow you get on the backside of the formation, you know, where say they by motion, they got one guy to your outside, and they got all the strength is over there. I have to communicate with you to make sure you know, based on the alignment of that receiver, how you need to play over here, because you're going to have to most likely make a play, both play side and backside. Mm. But that's my job to bring you along. I have the experience. I have to do that. And then also you want to alert the lineman. You're looking for any type of tip to give the lineman. You should have a run or pass call. You know, we used to call it, you know, Army, which is running, or it would be Delta, which is passing, or Air Force or whatever. Sure. You know, that would be the pass.
What are you looking at for that call?
Well, number one, I mean, first of all, if you look at the running back, if running back's dumb enough to just, and he goes and he looks where he's going. I used to play running back. Yeah. These little rookies, they get it. They just more worried about it. So that tells you. But then you look at, I used to look at the formation so that you're playing your tendencies and down a distance, who's in the game personnel. This is 50 million things that you're going to. Then you're looking at the splits of the offensive linemen. Then you're just looking at the pressure of the knuckles and stuff. And some guys, there's always one or two linemen that give it away because they're so lazy.
How early on did that come to you? Did you
not
know?
It took a while. Yeah.
Did you, like, at Nebraska, or are you talking?
Oh, at Nebraska. I think it's you restart, though.
Gotcha.
So when I came in playing as a freshman, I was just trying to get out the way.
You were the one looking where you got.
And listen, I was trying to make a couple plays, not mess up, and do it. Get but then as the season came on, I started to be more comfortable because I knew the game. I felt more comfortable with my teammates, and I'd made some plays. So then, you know, so I think it's something that you kind of grow and morph into. And then that's where it gets fun, because I felt like I had, like, my second year, middle of my second year, or your sophomore year, and then definitely for the rest of my career, I felt like I had such a good grasp on the defense. And I love playing, being the captain and the of the defense, the play caller, that those are the things that I really dove into, you know. And I used to be so, like, I would be just as excited for, like, Jason Peter or Grant or Mike Rucker or Octavius McFarlane or I guess Eric, whoever that I, you know, was able to give a
that
tip to.
That you brought along with you.
Yeah, and that they would go make a play.
Were those little things, was that a Coach Samuel thing? Was that a Troy Dumas thing? Like, who alerted you to those and helped you start looking at them? Yourself, self-taught sort of thing?
Coach Sam did. You know, his was different. His approach was different. He was like, hey, Chief, he's like, you know, next year when you watch your tape, man, he's like, you need to be disgusted. And I'm like, why? He's like, because you need to, like, he's like, when you watch yourself from the year before, you should already know the play's coming, and you should be thinking that you're faster, you're bigger, faster, stronger. And I never, so that was that. And then he told me as a young guy, he's like, since you're a freshman starting, he's like, you need to know what the defensive end is doing and the defensive tackle to your side at all times. You got to know what they're doing, because that's going to help you play faster. Now, McBride did, but then my dad really, that's one thing my dad, he's like, really taught me. He taught me this when I played running back. He's like, you got to know what everybody is doing.
Yeah.
Because before, when I first started playing, like, varsity as, like, a freshman, sophomore, I was like getting the ball and just going. He's like, man, you're making it too hard on yourself. So I just carried that over to defense. And, you know, when you're trying to compete for a position, you're a freshman. I was watching a ton of tape. I was putting in time. You know, I was just, you know, just taking advantage of the opportunity. So, you know, I felt like I said, you know, I like my career. I feel very confident about my career at both levels. Definitely say I probably took off in the pros than I did versus college. Now, the circumstances were different. But, you know, I felt like, you know, for me, you know, I wasn't the biggest, you know, but I was. So I wasn't the biggest, but I wasn't the smallest, but I definitely was bigger than average. You know, wasn't the strongest, but I wasn't the weakest, but definitely was probably more on the strong side, you know, because I dedicated myself. But still, right? Wasn't the fastest, wasn't the slowest. Definitely probably above average speed, especially definitely before I got hurt. Wasn't the quickest, wasn't the non-quickness or whatever you want to call it. But definitely was probably well above average quickness. But the thing that separated me, though, was my knowledge and the want to of the game, the mental strength.
Yeah.
And that's where the confidence came from, because I knew I would outwork everybody. And so, back to these guys, and I don't want to make it about myself, is like, with this 3-3-5 and 4-3, you know, for 4-2, which is nickel, 3-4, it is what you make it. It is what you make it. The fundamentals and the things that you need. And I'm going to leave it, or we're going before we're going to break, I always talk about the three E's when I train kids. It's effort, execution, and efficiency. The three E's. Now, the last two is predicated on the number one. Number one should be a non-negotiable. And the effort just isn't going out there and running around and looking like and straining and getting there with it. Remember, it was Bob Gett, the strain.
The strain.
Right? It's not that. Because you want to know where I need maximum effort? I need it in the classroom. I need it how you interact with people out in the public. I need it in the weight room. I need it in the meeting room. I need it in the practice field. I need it after practice. I need it maximum effort when you're eating, when you're recovering, when you're sleeping. That is where you start. That should be the non-negotiable. That should be the guarantee. Then the execution comes from more of the mental side. Because if you got the effort, which not isn't just running around, you'll be good to go. So what also is good to go is us going to a break. We're going to take a quick break, come back. Quick segment. Then we'll get to the 5 o'clock hour. Jay Foreman, Austin Orman, Old School. We'll be right back.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.